If you'd like to receive this podcast early and without ads, consider becoming a member of the DSR Network. Listeners to this show can receive 25% off the membership price. In addition to an ad-free listening experience and early access, members receive bonus content for virtually all of our shows via our private member feed, enhanced show notes for selected podcasts, and an invitation to join the DSR Slack community. Visit thedsrnetwork.com/buy and enter code NOJOKE to receive 25% off. That's thedsrnetwork.com/buy and code NOJOKE. This offer is limited and will expire on Saturday, April 6th, so act now. And thank you very much for your support.
Hello and welcome to the DSR Daily. I'm David Rothkopf, joined today by Riley Fesser. How are you doing, Riley?
Pretty good.
Our friend Chris Kotwar, who's usually with us, is off doing some kind of secret mission. But we are here to cover the world and try to make some sense of what makes no sense. What do you got to start with, Riley?
Well, Iran and Hezbollah have vowed retaliation after an airstrike attributed to Israel destroyed Iran's consulate in Damascus, Syria, and resulted in the deaths of 8 individuals, including 2 Iranian generals. The decision for a response was determined in a meeting of the Supreme National Security Council, led by the president, and also in attendance was the Supreme Leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei, and promised retribution. So we don't know if this response is going to be direct or through proxies like Hezbollah or the Houthis, but certainly represents a pretty major escalation in an already escalating conflict.
Yeah, it certainly doesn't look like, you know, Israel is eager to turn down the heat here. And I think, you know, some people have been fearful that it was seeking to, prolong the battle, because that prolongs the job of Benjamin Netanyahu as prime minister. By escalating with Iran, or escalating in the north with Iranian proxy Hezbollah. We're going to have watch this extremely closely, because obviously that kind of escalation could have a huge toll. Hezbollah is one of the most competent and well-equipped militaries in the region. But it's not the only strike yesterday from Israel, and I think your second story touches on one that was to many observers even more shocking.
Yeah, no doubt. So again, another strike by Israel, this time killing 7 individuals associated with the World Central Kitchen, including citizens from Australia, Britain, Poland, the United States, Canada, as well as local Palestinians. Despite coordinating with the IDF, the convoy for the World Central Kitchen, which was marked with the World Central Kitchen logo and transporting humanitarian food aid, was struck after leaving a warehouse. The Israeli military has said they're going to commit a independent and thorough investigation, but Netanyahu has already said that this was an accident, which kind of seems hard to believe given that it was marked and was coordinated with the IDF. But we will see if actual independent investigations can turn up anything on this. But obviously a huge tragedy.
Yeah, and when you say marked, it was a white vehicle. The roof of the vehicle had World Central Kitchen identification on it, filled the entire roof, unmistakably associated with the World Central Kitchen. And as you said, they were coordinating their movements with the Israelis. This is a disgusting act, reprehensible. And it's striking to me in that, you know, the World Central Kitchen is one of those few organizations in the world that stands exclusively for good. And, it was once thought that the Israelis were the good guy in a bunch of the conflicts in the region. And this government of Israel has turned them completely into the opposite of that. And nothing illustrates this quite as well as this attack, except for the deaths of 33,000 innocent people in Gaza, 70,000 more injured. Even if you assume several thousand of those were members of Hamas, the vast majority of those were people who were just as innocent and just as well-intentioned and had every bit as much life and were entitled every bit as much to a peaceful, happy life as the workers for World Central Kitchen. Every day that this war continues, there will be more such stories. That is why it's important to bring it to an end. It's also why potential escalation of it that may prolong it is so dangerous, not just to regional stability, but to the lives of people who are otherwise innocent and deserve the protection of their governments and their neighbors.
Well, Donald Trump has posted a $175 million bond to prevent New York from seizing his assets. This came after the appellate court ruled that he would not have to pay the full amount in bond, given that he said he struggled to meet the bond requirement, which is funny given that he often touts his enormous wealth. So clearly some kind of disparity there. But this does not prevent him from paying the full amount, which is nearly $500 million and of course grows every day with interest. The one condition of reducing his bond was a timely appeal. So we will see what kind of time frame that takes. But he kind of staves off the punishment once again. We'll see how long he can kind of keep ahead of it.
Yeah, for those of you who find the way Trump continues to sort of worm his way out of real consequences for his actions frustrating, you may be able to take some comfort from the fact that the Truth Social stock that merged with the SPAC that became publicly traded last week fell so much yesterday that Trump's paper worth declined by $1 billion yesterday. My prediction, all the paper worth associated with this particular transaction will disappear before he has his chance to get his hands on any of it. That doesn't mean, by the way, that some people won't profit off of this obvious scam. And it is a scam. The SEC documents for the company were released yesterday. It lost the company $59 million on $4 million in revenue. Riley, our financials here in the world's smallest media company are much better than that. And so I think we should be able to go public for billions of dollars. I suspect you would approve of that.
I do approve. I would love to be part of that billion-dollar enterprise for sure.
Yeah, well, by this measure, we're a billion-dollar enterprise, and we want to come and get ours. But I suspect that as people sort of come to their senses, they will get the hell out of this ridiculous deal. And it will be further revealed to be a particular type of scam called a pump and dump, where you go, you create a stock, it's got a lot of value, some people can cash in on that value, and then people gradually realize that as, you know, those people who were on the inside sell it off, that others will not be so fortunate and the value will disintegrate. That said, Schadenfreude is not the way we hold people accountable for breaking the law in the United States. One hopes that this appellate process that you referred to earlier does move along fairly quickly, and the day of reckoning for Trump's decades of fraud comes sooner.
Well, Ukraine has escalated its drone operations, claiming a significant attack in Russia's Tatarstan region, which is over 1,300 kilometers from the border. The assault injured 12 students and supposedly hit a facility involved in drone production, as well as an oil refinery. So again, unsurprising here that competing claims dispute how much damage was done. Of course, Ukraine is claiming this was pretty significant, whereas Russia and local sources are claiming minimal damage. I'm sure the truth lies somewhere kind of in between. Ukraine asserts that there was substantial destruction to the production site on that refinery. And it again just reflects Ukraine's increasing use of drones amidst reports of ammunition shortages and supposedly ambitious plans to enhance drone manufacturing. And also the fact that this was deep into Russian territory is a pretty significant development as well. So definitely something to watch in terms of Ukrainian strategy.
No question. I think in the longer term sense, this is the world's first drone war, both in terms of unmanned vehicles that fly and those that work in the water. And, you know, my sense is that techniques learned in this war will be studied. And as the vehicles grow more sophisticated with the benefit of things like AI, become more autonomous, you know, we will see a big difference in the way that smaller actors, non-state actors, are able to hold their own in battles with larger actors. On the other hand, of course, the larger actors will be able to launch vast swarms of these kind of drones in the future, each which can go and seek out a target. We've talked about this on past podcasts. We will continue to talk about it again, because what we are seeing here is not just a horrible war and a great injustice by Russia, but we're seeing the future of war being invented before our eyes.
Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi has sparked controversy once again, this time by revisiting the issue of the Kachetavu Island, which was ceded to Sri Lanka by India in 1974. And this is a clear effort to appeal to voters in Tamil Nadu, which is a region that fishes the area and has been growing in discontent over the detention of fishermen from Tamil Nadu. So this is, again, a clear appeal by Modi to more nationalist sentiments in India. This time he's really striking out against the Indian National Congress, who was the party that ceded the island back in 1974 under Prime Minister Indira Gandhi. So not at all surprising given Modi's brand of politics, but something to watch.
It's the kind of thing that happens a lot in the world, where you take a relatively small issue and use it for political purposes, regardless of the impact on the lives in question. Modi is an unabashed populist, and he will do whatever he can to maintain his power. And again, as you point out rightly, doing so in a nationalist way is his impulse. He's part of that wave of ethno-nationalists led by Vladimir Putin that includes Viktor Orban, includes Donald Trump, and included Bolsonaro, and includes Benjamin Netanyahu, and it includes Erdogan in Turkey, who yesterday suffered a fairly significant set of defeats in mayoral races. So maybe, you know, I don't know, let's end on a note of hope here. Maybe things are beginning to change. What if this is the year that Erdogan suffers a setback? The United States funds more support for Ukraine and Putin suffers more setbacks as he ages, that Donald Trump loses, that Bolsonaro in Brazil ends up in deeper legal trouble, as he may well end up in, and that Netanyahu ultimately gets pushed out of office. What if we ended up the year without a few of these ethno-nationalists and more of a triumph for you know, liberalism and democracy in the world? That wouldn't be such a bad thing, would it, Riley?
It certainly would not.
I'm not counting on it, but it's not impossible. And that's just the kind of thing that we will continue to cover here on the DSR Daily each and every day. I think our friend Chris will be back with us tomorrow. We will be back with you tomorrow. And we will be back with our more in-depth podcast each and every day this week and always. So join us for that here at the DSR Network. And if you want more information on what we got coming, go to thedsrnetwork.com and it will be there for you. Until then, thank you very much. Have a good day. Bye-bye.